Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. We got word from Hollywood late last night. The writer's strike is officially over, and WGA members are heading back to work. Union leaders have approved a deal with studios and streamers that includes better pay, working conditions, and protections against AI. Variety's TV editor Michael Schneider says they received required staff minimums, too.
The idea that there would be some protection to make sure that writing staffs continue to be robust, that there's some sort of guidelines to protect some of these jobs, that's a big win for the Writers Guild.
Republican presidential candidates hold their second primary debate tonight, but the front runner, Donald Trump, won't be there. He'll make a primetime address to auto workers at a non-union facility outside Detroit, a day after President Biden became the first president to join a picket line during his stop in Michigan. Correspondent Robert Costa from Wayne.
Advisors to former President Trump and President Biden tell me that these dueling appearances could be a preview of what's to come in the 2024 campaign. Many visits to Michigan and a battle for the support of working voters.
The Senate has taken the first step on a short-term spending bill to prevent a government shutdown this weekend, but they're still stuck on bills in the Republican-controlled House. CBS's Jared Hill.
That measure would keep government funded through mid-November and includes billions of dollars toward disaster relief and Ukraine aid, a non-starter for hard right House conservatives.
We cannot have continuing resolutions passing off of a Republican House floor with Democrat votes to advance the Biden policies.
Florida Republican Matt Gaetz, among lawmakers who want funding for Ukraine, dropped from the proposal. In Philadelphia, police say more than 100 masked teenagers stormed a Foot Locker, an Apple Store, and a Lululemon in Center City, grabbing as much merchandise as they could and stuffing it into bags. Officers have made several arrests. One chain is fed up with looting. Here's CBS's Jim Crisula.
Target is closing 9 stores in New York City, San Francisco, Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, saying that theft and organized retail crime have threatened the safety of its workers and customers. While the store closings account for just a fraction of Target's 1,900 stores nationwide, the move is considered significant.
American astronaut Frank Rubio is finally on his way home.
And the hatch closed on the Prashal module.
His Soyuz spacecraft undocked from the International Space Station 6 months late. He's expected to arrive back on Earth this morning after 371 days. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Wisconsin is facing an unprecedented threat. A constitutional crisis that would overrule the votes of nearly 2 million Wisconsinites who voted in the state Supreme Court election this past April. It's a threat made by some extremist Republicans who are desperate to overturn a fair and democratic election so they can hold on to power. Instead of focusing on the issues we really care about, they are threatening to illegally impeach Justice Janet Protasiewicz without evidence before she's even ruled on a single case. Removing Justice Janet Protasiewicz from office would threaten our democracy and overrule the will of the people. But it's not too late to protect your vote and stand up for the rule of law. Tell your state legislators not to overturn the results of an election. Tell them to oppose the illegal impeachment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Contact your state legislators at 1-800-362-9472. Then visit defendjustice.us to learn more about how you can help stop the illegal impeachment of Justice Janet. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
Here's to trekking through a kaleidoscope of fall color in Wisconsin. To being like, who's up for whitewater rafting? And turning stories into souvenirs. Here's to rich traditions made new again with good company. And seasonal flavors that taste even better when shared with friends. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your fall getaway at travelwisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready.
It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. Red Delicious, Honey Crisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Wednesday, September 27th. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. If you're joining us on the app or by podcast or on social media, we're just glad to have you here in the state of Wisconsin Sense, where we unpack the news for you every morning. And this morning, we formally, finally celebrate the Milwaukee Brewers becoming your National League Central Division champions for 2023, even though they lost last night, which means we have to say thank you to the Chicago Cubs. And let's get right to the highlights. The Cubs were ahead of the Atlanta Braves in Atlanta 6-0 and blew it in part because the Braves scored two runs in the eighth inning when the right fielder, Seiya Suzuki, dropped an easy fly ball from Sean Murphy. Let's give a listen.
Murphy, shallow right center, but it hangs up in the air.
Oh, he dropped it!
He dropped the ball!
Needless to say, the crowd was a little fired up in Atlanta. They already know they're going to the playoffs. They have had an absolutely dominating season, but decided, you know, why let up now when you can be a spoiler for the Cubs? And what a spoiler it might turn out to be, because the wild card race is still really tight in the National League. It is still possible for the Cubs to not even make the playoffs. They will have three games against the Brewers to wrap up the regular season this week. We'll talk more about that coming up, but let's get to the news. I couldn't resist playing that highlight right off the top, though, because it's so hard to be a Chicago fan these days. Well, here's what else is on tap this morning. We are learning about a new way that Wisconsin can lead the nation to a cleaner future, something called agrivoltaics. That's a fancy way of saying dual-use farmland that can grow crops and generate solar power. We'll talk to Melissa Baldoff in our weekly climate check about how Wisconsin leaders are trying to figure out the best ways to work the land and build the solar infrastructure and protect water and habitat, reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, and grow the next generation of jobs across rural Wisconsin in green energy industries. We'll also talk about the latest from Capitol Hill as Republicans continue to fight amongst themselves, which could lead to a government shutdown that would hurt a whole lot of real Americans, just as Republicans are getting set to gather for tonight's second Republican debate, except for Donald Trump, who is going to be appearing in Michigan. At least we think he still is, but that's after a judge ruled yesterday that all but gave the Trump business the death penalty for being a fraud for all of these years. A very big ruling that we will unpack as well. In our second hour, we'll talk not only about President Biden joining the picket line with striking auto workers, but it's only the latest display of how workers are demanding better pay and conditions. And that includes here in Wisconsin. It's not just about big industrial companies, but mid-sized video game developers, small coffee shops. Labor reporter J.T. Seskowski will join us to tell us what's behind the growing trend toward union representation and demands for better working conditions. We'll talk to Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show. We'll get the weather forecast for the weekend, which apparently is going to include four days or so back in the 80s to start the month of October. So the very, very warm summer of 2023 around the world is going to continue into the fall as well. Along the way on this and any other topic, join us at 844-967-2789 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com is the email address. And if you're watching on Facebook, either through the Up North News Facebook page or Civic Media, you can leave a comment there and we might be able to grab that comment, put it up on screen, and respond to it as well. But right now, we're going to head down to Madison, the Civic Media Control Center, where Sam Davison, the Proud of Ringle, is standing by to tell us how things are looking down there. A little rainy this morning, Mr. Davison?
It's wet still. It was raining last night, but it wasn't really sprinkling at all when I came in.
Mm-hmm. I guess we should give folks a heads up that we have one more show here tomorrow, and then I'm going to be taking some time off. But for the first time in the, 202 shows since I've started doing this, when I take a couple of days off, instead of running best of shows, we're going to have fill-in hosts here instead.
That's right.
Who will bring their shows to the early morning. I believe, don't hold me to this, but I believe it's going to be Todd Alba on Friday and then Chad Holmes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Todd Alba again Thursday, Friday.
I think that's right.
You just got used to working with me. How are you feeling about having other folks trying to tap in here at 6 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, well, of course they're not going to be as good as you.
Oh, look, pal, this is not what that question was set up for.
Oh, I don't know. Well, but, we'll see.
I will see if there's a little something that can be put in your pay envelope anyway for that. But I guess what I'm getting at is I'm a little nervous. It's not that Chad or Todd will, oversleep or, not be here or not bring their A game as they always do. But it's an adjustment. You know that, having to adjust to, can you get here at 5 in the morning and get ready for your show? So I feel, on the one hand, I feel bad for putting them through it, but I'm also extremely grateful that they can do that while I take a couple of days off, as Huey Lewis likes to sing. And so get ready for that. But one more show tomorrow, and then starting Friday, we'll see how things roll there and see how much fun they can have with Sam along the way. Let's pause right here. When we come back, we will unpack the news. A lot to cover, as you could tell, from just a little bit of tease there. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning, when you're here for 2 hours every weekday, you're up north. And we'll be back after this.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Autoglass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Autoglass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Autoglass Now today for full details.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming
on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens.
Today, I am talking to the owner of Funky Fresh Spring Rolls, my friend Truman McGee. From an environmentally friendly perspective, the fact that it's frozen means that it's not going to waste.
I am a cereal strawberry abuser. If you're a fruit and you're watching this, stay away from me, okay? Do not jump in my shopping cart because I will let you die.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Hey, do you have any Pink fans in your house? I know I do. And they might be interested to hear that it was on this day in 2008 that Pink earned her first solo number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100 with So What from her fifth studio album, Funhouse. And we'll have more in today's history lesson and music break coming up a little later this hour. Now, getting back to the Brewers, they did lose last night to the last place Cardinals 4-1, but it really was a parade of pitchers. Everybody was getting just a little bit of action to keep them loose heading into the postseason. You know, Adrian Hauser retired the first nine batters, but then he gave up four runs, and then a string of relievers came in after that, and Wade Miley will pitch tonight in the second game of that series against the Cardinals. And as I said before, then the Cubs will come to town to wrap up the regular season before the postseason gets going. So as far as that wild card race goes, that the Cubs are still locked in, again, remember, there are three wild card slots. The Philadelphia Phillies have already clinched one of them. And so the Cubs and Arizona and Miami and Cincinnati, of those four teams, two of them are going to get wild card slots and two of them are going to be heartbroken by the end of this week. Arizona has one of those spots right now. The Cubs would have one of those spots right now. But Miami is only a half a game behind the Cubs. And Cincinnati is only a game and a half behind the Cubs. And so anything can happen. And basically, whoever gets that one of those wild card spots is going to go up against the Brewers in a best of three wild card series with all the games at American Family Field next week starting Tuesday. The games would be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday if necessary. And you're saying, what time? Don't know. It's one of those things where the playoff schedule gets set really late once they see who all the teams are. That's when we'll find out times and networks and everything else. But for this week, you can catch the Brewers and the Cardinals tonight and the Cubs later on this week on WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM, and Oshkosh Air Support in the Fox Valley, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM. And again, a reminder, the Packers play tomorrow. A very short week. Thursday night football, Packers hosting the Lions at Lambeau Field, and that game can only be found on Amazon Prime. All right, let's unpack the news. You can react to today's stories, vent a little about them, share what else is on your mind with a statewide radio audience by calling 844-967-2789 or posting a little something up on our live video feeds in places like the Up North News Facebook page or the Civic Media Facebook page or a few others. But let's start with former President Donald Trump, who had built an image as a successful businessman. And yet, even as he was running for president in 2016, there were people noting he's not been a successful businessman. He's successful at promoting himself. He's successful at claiming to be a successful businessman, but he had a string of failures. He had a long list of court cases where he was accused of fraud. And yet it took until now, 2023, for the law to finally catch up with him, for the New York State Attorney General to catch up, to the point where there was supposed to be a trial next week on whether the Trump Organization and Trump and his two oldest sons had been committing fraud for years. A judge yesterday said, we don't even need a trial it is so obvious. And so the trial will still go on next week, but more to determine the punishment, which could essentially be the corporate version of the death penalty. Yeah, the same guy, Donald Trump, who was bandying about the calls for a death penalty against America's top military commander, is facing his own corporate death penalty for a corporation that was built not just on a foundation of lies, the entire framework was lies, a framework where he would lie about the size of the framework of his empire, constantly inflating the price of his properties when it came to trying to sell them, but then diminishing the price of the property when it came time to have those properties taxed. And some folks may say, well, doesn't that happen all the time? You could say yes in some instances, but it's still illegal. And if you do it on a grand enough scale, you're going to get caught and there's going to be consequences. In one case, just Mar-a-Lago, for example, the court found that he inflated its value on one financial statement by as much as 2,300%. Okay, knock a couple of zeros off there. If he'd inflated the value of Mar-a-Lago by 23%, he could essentially be, you know, found to have committed fraud. If he inflated the value by 230%, he'd really open himself up to charges. But this guy, who was the other one in New York? Leona Helmsley. Remember how she said taxes are for the little people, and she eventually went to prison for not paying her taxes and inflating the size of her properties? Donald Trump knew her and knew of her, but he did it anyway because, again, the rules don't apply when you're rich enough. The taxes don't apply if you're wealthy enough. So Trump went ahead and lied about the size of his Manhattan apartment. He claimed that his three-story penthouse in Trump Tower was nearly three times its actual size. And he valued it at $327 million, which was outrageous by any global real estate scale that you want to use. The judge in the case wrote, quote, "A discrepancy of this order of magnitude by a real estate developer sizing up his own living space of decades can only be considered fraud," end quote. Not a white lie, not a savvy business decision. No, it's fraud. Trump Tower itself doesn't have as many floors as he advertises because he renumbered some of the floors on the elevator buttons. He has consistently done this throughout his corporate life. And he's finally getting caught. He's finally been convicted of tax fraud, as he was last year in an unrelated criminal case for helping executives dodge taxes on perks such as apartments and cars. He's been ordered to give millions to charity as a fine when his own charity, the Trump Foundation, was shut down because of fraud. And so next week, what may be finalized is that he essentially loses his licensure to operate businesses in the state of New York, a corporate death penalty. When you add that onto everything else that he has failed at over the years, it is a wonder that we are still talking about him as being the front runner for the Republican nomination. This is somebody who has been rambling incoherently at recent rallies, who is going to be speaking tonight to a group of people in Michigan that he claims are union workers, but he's holding it at an anti-union shop where he's going to trash union laborers tonight. He's skipping a debate at the Reagan Library where he would have to answer questions. Imagine if he were there tonight having to answer questions about his business practices, having to answer questions about recent discrepancies where he, you know, mistook who he was talking about. We could ask him, what did he mean by those comments the other day about whales are dying because of windmills? But he's not doing all that because he wants to control the message and stand behind a lectern, stand behind a podium, and ramble on with his usual remarks that people who like him, they eat it up. And that's the thing that obviously is still troubling about where we are in the country these days. Everything that I just outlined would have sunk any other candidate. If any other candidate were convicted of fraud for running their business, it would have been the instant end of their campaign. But Trump's bravado and boisterousness and his willingness to lie even after he's been caught lying is somehow appealing to some folks. And that's unfortunate. But don't take the volume of support for him, the loudness, as a measure of the quantity. There's still a long ways to go, even before the Republican Party decides if they really want this guy to be the nominee. All right, let's go over quick to President Joe Biden. He joined striking auto workers on the line there. He spoke out in favor of the workers getting a significant raise because of the sacrifices that they made during the Great Recession and still haven't made whole about that. And in fact, let me come back to Donald Trump for a moment, because some audio has come up of comments that Trump made back in 2008 after the United Auto Workers made massive concessions to keep the auto workers afloat. Did Trump thank the workers? No. He blamed them. Here's what Trump had to say in 2008.
I mean, everything. It's years and years of deep-seated. And, you know, I see it in my own company. While my company is a lot newer, over the years, we have Christmas bonus time, right? And we've done well. Now, I pay somebody a bonus 20 years ago. Then you give them a little more, a little more, a little more. Now it's 20 years later. All of a sudden, I'm saying, I'm paying them too much. I'm paying them too much. I mean, I'm paying some guys much more than I should be paying. You know why? Time. Same thing with the unions. They get a little increase, they get another.
What are your guys? 40, 50 years ago. Do you give them a condo, or what do you give them?
No, I just give them bonuses. But, you know, I always like to give
them a little
bit more.
But I know it's not a hickory cheese log.
No,
I know that.
I'm not even talking about top-level people. Right. I'm talking about, you go a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. All of a sudden, 20 years is up, and now you're saying, man, that's a lot of money. I'm sitting behind my desk signing these checks.
It, right?
They expect
December
it.
Rolls and around and I think Don's going to be good to me.
Neil, it's the same thing with the unions.
That's right.
They get their little 5%. They get another 2%. They get another 3%, 4%. Then all of a sudden, they're making more money than the people that own the company.
I mean, I don't blame you one bit if you're immediately thinking back to National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And the boss who decides to cut out the Christmas bonus without telling anybody in order to save a lousy buck. Imagine the ingratitude. Imagine what somebody must be feeling, that a bonus to them is an obligation rather than an expression of gratitude for what your employees have done for you over the years. But set that aside, and let's just talk about auto industry jobs here, okay? The New York Times economics reporter, Jim Tankersley, did a quick write-up of the average monthly increase in auto workers' jobs in the auto industry under recent presidents. Under Bill Clinton, it was an increase of 1,800 jobs. Under George W. Bush, and in the Great Recession that came at the end of his presidency, it was a loss of 5,800 auto workers' jobs. Under Obama, it was a gain of 2,800 auto jobs. Trump pre-COVID was essentially break-even, a gain of 600 jobs. Post-COVID, or for his total presidency, again, a wash, a loss of 200 jobs. Under Joe Biden, a gain of 4,000 auto industry jobs. Somebody's standing on their side, and the other person is not, but is going to pretend to tonight, even as he avoids questions about the fraud that is apparently going to finally put him out of business. All right, let's turn our attention to a new generation of green jobs across rural Wisconsin coming up next from Melissa Baldoff and our climate change report next. You're up north.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Breaking news from North Korea. Pyongyang says it is expelling American soldier Travis King, claiming he's confessed to illegally crossing the border in July. King had faced disciplinary action in the U.S. over an assault in South Korea. Hollywood writers are headed back to work after union board members approved a new contract agreement with studios and streamers. CBS's Jared Hill.
The three-year deal includes better upfront pay and an agreement on residual compensation based on the popularity of a streaming show.
It also includes protections against AI. Former President Trump is skipping tonight's Republican primary debate and giving a primetime speech to auto workers in Michigan. Instead, CBS's Robert Costa.
The Trump campaign still believes it has a shot in Michigan, so it's someplace you have to come. Even if you're not aligned with the labor unions on policy on every front or on many fronts at all.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Brock.
I didn't realize that Tucker Carlson's like hemorrhaging viewers. And I heard yesterday someone was like, oh yeah, like no one's actually watching it anymore. I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of like Threads.
it was a thing for about five
like a
minutes.
Week. Whoever was excited, then they moved on.
Well, it's like Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It's a big deal for about a week.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. This includes a commitment to news. Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group Wisconsin Breaking News today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
The Green Bay Packers call Lambeau Field home, but did you know the stadium has a history all its own? It started with where to build it. Residents on both sides of the city wanted it. Officials argued there had to be room for growth. Eventually, farmland was purchased, but in Ashwaubenon. The bargaining continued, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Green Bay City Stadium became a reality the following year and was renamed in honor of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau in 1965. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Ball. Dig out your lederhosen. It's time for Oktoberfest in La Crosse, September 28th through the 30th. 3 days featuring German food and beer, Stein races, barrel rolling, and the best in live music, polka bands. Celebrate the friendliest fest in the Midwest. Oktoberfest in La Crosse, Thursday through Saturday, September 28th to the 30th. At the Oktoberfest grounds. Find more information at OktoberfestUSA.com. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Hey, this week in our climate check with Melissa Baldoff, we're going to learn new stuff. Sometimes we talk about the, you know, things you're familiar with, electric cars and things like that. I never heard the word agrivoltaics until a day or two ago, and Melissa Baldoff is going to help us learn more about what is a fancy word for, I guess, dual use production of both crops and energy. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks.
All right. So let's talk about this. The place where I first saw it was a note from Senator Tammy Baldwin's office saying that she's working on a bill that will help protect farmers' investment in using some of their land for, you know, for example, solar farms. But it then gets into that whole area of so much land that could be used for solar farms can also be used for farming. And so you're looking for ways to use them both and protect everybody's investments, everything like that. Like I said, this is all brand new to me, but clearly some folks have been studying up to try to get the best of both worlds, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, this, what we talked about recently too, is, you know, the importance of our universities being able to put the time and effort into research. And, you know, that's what leads to really innovative ideas like this, where we're going to be able to, you know, connect two really great components of what Wisconsin is able to do. You know, we are known for our agricultural heritage, and then we're known to be innovators, and we're going to be able to, you know, pioneer more of this new technology related to solar, related to clean energy, and combine that with our agricultural, you know, expertise. And I think that's a really great thing to see in general. I love to see this from Senator Baldwin. You know, it is not surprising at all to me to see her out in front of such an important topic, really leading the way, you know, looking to get this done in a bipartisan way, which, you know, we don't see a whole lot of that, unfortunately. And this just seems like an idea that, you know, that everyone can get, everyone should be able to get behind and support. And, you know, to your point, you know, it's these, you know, we've got a lot of these dual purpose things, and Wisconsinites, you know, we contain multitudes, we can do a lot of things, you know, we can love the Packers and hate the Bears. We can do it all. So we can be, you know, really successful in our agriculture economy and in our clean energy economy.
Right. And we're going to learn so much from this. And I know we have Hans Breitenmoser on every couple of weeks to talk about farming and ag issues. And we'll probably get into more of that side of things with him. But I had to share one of the things that I learned in researching this is I'm thinking, well, wait, does this putting, you know, like solar panels or solar farms, you know, does it impede crop growth? And you learn all about that there is actually a maximum amount of sunlight that crops can use. And at that point, everything else is excess. And so you actually can have the best of both worlds on that. But let's get back to the energy side of it, because part of the reason Senator Baldwin wants to get involved in this comes back to something that we had discussed previously, not with solar farms, but with wind farms. And that is making sure that if farmers want to do something innovative, that they're not taken advantage of, that, you know, that they still have certain rights to their land, or they have an expectation of payments. And so for all of the good benefits that can come from this, I think it's very nice to know that there's somebody looking out for, you know, the legalities and dotting all the I's, crossing the T's, and making sure that this is a win-win strategy.
Exactly. And you know, that's, you know, one of many reasons to be so excited that Senator Baldwin is leading the charge on this, because nobody is going to stand up for farmers more than Senator Baldwin. And, you know, another thing that I saw that she talked about in this announcement was, you know, this idea of energy independence. And that's something that, you know, I don't think enough people are really talking about when we think about clean energy, is that Wisconsinites and, you know, folks all over the country, you know, they really want to be, you know, we want to control our own destiny when it comes to energy production and consumption. People don't want to be reliant on, you know, foreign companies for oil. You know, we want to be able to be in charge of what we're doing, control our own destiny. And this is one of those concepts that really promotes that and really gives people, especially in rural communities, more options, and they are more in charge. They are able to, you know, really promote energy independence in their communities.
Yeah, I mean, every one of these things that reduces our reliance on foreign oil and embraces, you know, clean energy is good for the climate as well. So again, there's a whole lot of win-win to be had here, because look, there's folks who are going to oppose this for one reason or another. They may be oil company apologists, or they just may not want to embrace something new, or they may want to say wacky things like whales are bad for windmills, or whatever the right hell Donald Trump was trying to. Do you know what Trump was trying to say the other day about this?
You know,
Please don't say yes.
I pride myself on not being able to understand most of what he says, because it's almost entirely nonsense. You know, although one thing, I'll digress a bit here, one thing I did understand was his, you know, calling for the execution of the head of the military.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that he's largely nonsensical. But you know, I don't know what the opposition to something like this would be, but, you know, like we've talked about before, you know, politics often gets in the way of really good ideas, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think hopefully seeing something like this that does have bipartisan support, you know, maybe will help get more folks on board.
Yeah, look, all we're asking here, apart from the usual mockery that can come sometimes with Trump and politics, is don't be saying things that you don't have evidence for, whether it's overturning an election, you know, attempting to do that, or making claims about things that are bad for, you know, whales or anything like that. When you're speculating out loud like that, that's something for talk show hosts. That's not something for presidents or presidential candidates or anything else, you know, for that matter. These are serious things. Like we said before, you know, when it comes to farmers using their land, these are serious business issues that, you know, deal with crops, deal with energy. And there will, like I said, there will be critics of land use one way or another. All we ask is that it be rooted in fact and not rumor or something that a goofball politician tells you, right?
Exactly. You know, this is really about people's livelihoods and the livelihoods of communities around the state and around the country. You know, we know that we have had far too many farmers struggling in this state to keep afloat, to keep providing food for their communities, to, you know, be able to pay the bills, you know, to keep the farms they've had in their family for generations, open and running. So anything that we can do to help them thrive and keep them going, which is so critical to our state's economy. And, you know, I think to just our heritage and who we are and what we're proud of in this state, you know, we really want to do everything we can to support farmers and rural communities. And, you know, like you said, ignore the nonsense of people who, you know, clearly don't want to be part of the solution. It's one thing to have an honest debate on the best ways forward. It's quite another to, you know, just throw a wrench in anything because you can.
Right, right. Looking at a report on this topic from back in May by Wisconsin Public Radio, they cite a recent report from Clean Wisconsin that says that the total acreage right now for solar panels, either approved or currently being looked at by the Public Service Commission, is about 30,000 acres, which is a nice start. But the report notes that if the state's going to meet its carbon-free goal by 2050, we're talking about going from 30,000 acres to something like 230,000 acres or more. So it's already ambitious, but it certainly does sound doable as well if we're willing to take this kind of industry seriously.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I think when you look at, you know, what President Biden has done with the Inflation Reduction Act and the IIJA and these efforts to, you know, to put resources behind efforts to expand clean energy progress, you know, we're going to see people able to make, you know, really make a dent in, you know, kind of that deficit of what we have versus what we need to accomplish our goals. And again, you know, we talked about this before too. It's going to continue to create really good paying jobs. We know that is a very fast growing sector of the economy. You look at the, Clean Jobs Midwest report, and they, you know, they frequently talk about what the growth looks like in clean energy jobs. You know, in Wisconsin, we've got, you know, about, you know, 70,000-75,000 clean energy jobs right now. It's an industry that continues to grow, and there is a lot of opportunity for people to fill these jobs that are, you know, high paying. Many don't require a college degree. And these are jobs too that really benefit folks in rural parts of the state too. You know, you see a lot about, you know, Madison and Milwaukee, and yes, there's a lot of growth there, some big hubs for clean energy, but, you know, about 1 in 5 of these jobs are in rural areas. And as you expand the capacity for solar, those are going to be even more jobs in rural areas, you know, just based on where the land is. So this is an opportunity to really boost the economy as well, and, you know, put put money in people's pockets.
Because we're not just talking about, you know, setting up the panels and everything related to, you know, the generation of electricity, but you're also going to have people working on soil, water, vegetation, and conservation plans, you know, to make sure that the land is properly used. You need to protect pollinator habitats, for example, be mindful of soil health. Darren Von Rudin, the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, was thanking Senator Baldwin for keeping these factors in mind so that you, again, can help both, you know, producers, our farm families, and those who are working on a new generation of solar energy. So, I mean, to tie a bow on all of this, you know, Melissa, it just feels like because of what Senator Baldwin put forward, she seems to have been able to grasp what is being developed right now with what are the things you need to be mindful of for the future. And again, we're not the desert Southwest. And yet I feel like Wisconsin is getting positioned to be at the cutting edge of a new type of solar energy generation that's unique to the Midwest.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's just, you know, one of those things about Wisconsin is that we are always going to be folks who are innovators and are going to work hard to make progress. And, you know, we have the opportunity to really step up and be a leader when it comes to clean energy production. And I think that we're going to continue to see, you know, robust advocacy from Senator Baldwin and from Governor Evers as well. You know, so I think there's no shortage. Well, there's definitely a shortage of supporters. Excuse me. We definitely need more politicians to step up on this issue in Wisconsin.
Although to be clear, she is co-sponsoring this bill with Republican Chuck Grassley of Iowa. And that, you know, absolutely, say what you will about Senator Grassley, but there are a lot of Republicans who understand the importance of this for farmers, for the rural economy, and for future power needs in their respective states.
I think that's exactly right. And I just hope that more Wisconsin Republicans will, you know, take a page from Senator Grassley and be willing to do the right thing.
Here's hoping. Melissa Baldoff with this week's Climate Check. This was great. Learned a lot of new stuff this week. I'll be off next week, but we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks here. Thanks, Melissa.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Hey, and then one quick note from Washington. The Senate is charging ahead with a bipartisan package to temporarily fund the government. But even though you have Republicans and Democrats working together in the Senate, over in the House, you have Republicans working against Republicans as they once again try to push through some massive domestic spending cuts, which has no real chance of getting through the Senate and therefore no real chance of staving off a government shutdown that could come by the end of this week. And so coming up in our next hour, we will hear from Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who spoke yesterday about, you know, what is really behind all of this. What is it that Democrats want Republicans to do? In short, basically live up to a deal that they made earlier this year. But we'll hear more from the Congresswoman about that. But coming up next, we expect to see Melissa Kay here from locally grown radio, WFHR, for today's history lesson and music break. That's coming up in just a bit. And then your weatherology forecast and another check on sports along the way as well. This is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday. We'll be right back.
Weather brought to you by the Town of Brookfield's third annual Brooktoberfest, September 30th from 11 until 6 at Steffen's Soccer. Enjoy live music, local food vendors, best dress competition, wiener dog races, a kid zone, a classic car show, and more. Log on discoverbrookfield.com. Prost!
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Scattered thunderstorms likely today, otherwise cloudy skies expected. High of 66, winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies tonight, chance for scattered storms, lowest dip down to about 58. Cloudy again tomorrow, highs around 67. Low 70s Friday, turning warmer on Saturday, with highs in the upper 70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 61 degrees.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
That, of course, would be Mr. Loaf. Meatloaf was born this day in 1947, but sadly passed away last year. After giving us Paradise by the Dashboard Light, Two Out of Three Ain't Bad, one of the many great compositions by Jimmy Steinman, and so much more from Meatloaf. But I have to share this one story. So for that, I'd best bring in Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. Melissa, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on, Pat.
Well, you know, it's always a pleasure. So as we listen to Paradise by the Dashboard Light in the background, my story on this is that every Friday, when I was going to UW-Eau Claire, in Governor's Hall, which is where my girlfriend lived at the time, now my wife, I'm happy to say, but every Friday, I want to say like 4 o'clock, maybe not 5 o'clock, but somebody had put their stereo speakers in the window and just blasted this song out. And by the way, it came from the girls' wing of Governor's Hall at the time. So big fans of Paradise by the Dashboard Light. That was like our kickoff to the weekend. Did either one of you have something like that when you were younger, like every Friday at such and such, this was the anthem that was played?
I wish, but
I swear to
no.
God, if you say like Barry Manilow or something, I'm going to be so depressed, Melissa. Nothing?
No, it was probably a hymn, you know. I was the religion. It's Friday night, sundown is Sabbath, so.
Okay. How about you, Sam?
I can't say that I have had that, no.
Wow, okay. Well, now I feel
That's
very lucky.
Fun memory for you, Pat.
Well, yeah. And by the way, in an unrelated note about Paradise by the Dashboard Light, completely unrelated, this is the anniversary of the Jesuits. The Society of Jesus received its charter from Pope Paul III on this day in 1540. I'm sure it's completely a coincidence.
Probably.
All right. On this day in 1986, the Beatles were back on the chart. They peaked at number 23 with this tune. And, of course, our quiz is, why was it back on the charts in 1986? All right, I can't be stumping you guys. Do you both know why it was back on the charts in 1986?
Well, I know because I saw the show document for today.
But if you hadn't seen the show notes, you wouldn't know?
I mean, I might have been able to guess.
Okay, well,
I've seen the movie that it was in, but...
Let's leave it to Melissa. Nothing?
Yeah, nothing.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh.
The big parade scene where he's, you know, up there on the float, lip-syncing to this. So that's what put the Beatles on the charts this day in 1986.
I think that was my first exposure to music of the Beatles was seeing Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I could see, yes, I could absolutely see that that's the case. And that's not a bad way for that to happen. Here's a little historical notes from the early days of the country. Samuel Adams, born this day in 1722. No, he doesn't know that the beer was named after him. That was just a weird coincidence. But on this day in 1777, Lancaster, Pennsylvania became the capital of the United States for one day. because, you know, we were still at war with the British, and the British had invaded Philadelphia, which is where the capital had been. So Congress had to evacuate Philadelphia, and Lancaster became the capital of the U.S. Well, it leads to this little historical note, because I wasn't aware of that. But it turns out there were a lot of different capitals. I knew that it had been in Philadelphia for a while. It had been in New York for a while. Eventually, Washington, D.C. was constructed. But the national capital had been for a time in Lancaster, PA, Baltimore, York, Pennsylvania, Trenton, New Jersey, Princeton, New Jersey, Annapolis, Maryland. Yeah, and then all the others. Were either one of you aware that Congress was on the run a lot of the time?
I thought it had only been like two or three places before it moved to Washington, D.C.
Same here, which is something that I thought we had ended in this country. January 6th, it almost changed that. So there's our historical trivia. All right, now it's time for another case of a teen idol singing star becomes a senior citizen today. Happy 65th birthday to Sean Cassidy.
Wow.
There we go. Da-do-run-run-run. Da-do-run-run. Was that in Stripes? Was that scene with... Anyway. Yeah, Sean Cassidy, 65. He was born in L.A. His mother, of course, was actress Shirley Jones. But Sean Cassidy did not join the Partridge Family like his mom and half-brother David Cassidy. But he did go on to act and star in the Hardy Boys mysteries. And he had some hits in 1977, including this remake of Da-do-run-run. Sean Cassidy was all over Tiger Beat magazine and all of that good stuff. It's always a little odd about our teen idols hitting those senior years, but that's where we find Sean Cassidy these days. Someday we're going to say that about the Jonas Brothers, and
Britney Spears.
Britney Spears is going to be 65 someday. Yep. And that's how some of us are reacting to the Sean Cassidy birthday today. Fans of The Tonight Show, you should know that the very first Tonight Show with Steve Allen was broadcast on this night in 1954. Let's see, we've got several birthdays here. Let's start with Brad Arnold. Once again, a case of you don't know the name, you know the band. Three Doors Down, Brad Arnold is 45 today. That, of course, is their song Kryptonite. Actress Gwyneth Paltrow is 51 today. Lil Wayne, wow, the rapper, is 41. Jenna Ortega, who has been in several different things, but most recently, I just loved her in Wednesday, the Netflix series. Jenna Ortega is 21 today. The Dave Matthews Band released their first album, Under the Table and Dreaming, on this day in 1994. The band had been on the road a lot prior to this, so they already had a big fan base in the Virginia area, but earned a whole legion of new fans when this album came out with tracks like What Would You Say? And Ants March. So this album would go on to sell over 6 million copies and inspire a whole generation of roadies. Or what? I don't know what they're called. Jimmy Buffett has parrot heads. I don't know if Dave Matthews Band fans have a nickname or not. Fans, not fans?
I like their music.
I only know like two or three songs from them. I'm not sure.
Okay. I'm sure some of the some folks are shouting at their radio right now.
Yeah.
How do you know?
The super fans.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? Send us a note. Radio at upnorthnewswi.com. All right, Melissa, what's happening in central Wisconsin on locally grown radio, WFHR?
Well, we still got our chicken naming contest on. You can see I'm wearing my chicken shirt.
Oh, look at that. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this poor person needs a chicken. There
That's
we go.
Chicken.
Chicken needs a name.
Okay.
So wiscountry.com/chicken. Mm-hmm. This Saturday, I'm going to be at the Wausau Public Library doing a live remote for a different radio station, WXCO.
Okay.
So
that's great. But hey,
interesting times.
Always nice to get out and about and say hi to folks. I'm glad everybody's healthier at your place
now.
We're
getting there.
Yes. No longer homebound like you were.
No.
But you know, even when that's the case, we still get to visit with you on Wednesdays, and we are very thankful for that. Thank you, Melissa, so much. It was good to see you.
Good to see you both.
I always love when you guys come play along with my little musical games every morning at this time. So much more coming up in our next hour. We'll talk about the shutdown showdown. And then we'll have J.T. Seskowski talking about labor issues.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.